This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts. I'm the CEO and founder of Planex, the market-leading fintech focused on treasury, liquidity, and risk. Right, today our topic is entitled How to Enhance Liquidity and Risk Management Through Payment Control. First of all, a big welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, wherever you may be. And a big thank you to all our audience today, and also for everyone who've used this after the event. As they say, would be nothing without you. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through. I can take these as we go. Or we can also answer them at the end and send them through to you. If you do want to ask a question, please put it in the comments section you see on the right-hand side of your screen. And if you can do, let us know who you are and also the role so we can put it into contents. If you would like to join a future podcast, just let us know. Reach out if you've got an interesting topic you'd like to talk about. We'd be delighted for you to join any of these podcasts. But today I'm joined by Nick Nichols. Nick has spent a whole career in the banking industry, and we're very, very lucky to have him. He joined Planex a few years ago. So, Nick, would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. Thanks, Nev. Nick Nichols. I started my career in banking. I know it's hard to believe my rather youthful looks, but back in November 1980 at Credit Suisse, or Credit Suisse First Boston. In there, I covered a number of roles, which touched on front, middle, and back office, predominantly in the treasury space or cash management areas within operations. I left there about 10 years ago when I felt my apprenticeship had been well and truly done, and became a contractor and consultant, and found my way to Planex, where I'm thoroughly enjoying my time, actually. Good place to be.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the podcast. And Nick, you know I normally talk football at the start of these, and I particularly know that you've rejected the top six, the Premier League, and you actually support someone else who was probably successful in the 80s when you started your career, right?
I was actually at that FA Cup final. I think that was a glorious moment when we lost to Everton, I think, 2-0 back in 1984, Watford. Yeah. Watford. And why? Because my granddad used to take me when I was a nipper to the ground. So family connection. So yeah, Watford.
At least you've supported them your whole life though, right? Not like some. Who will remain nameless? Right, let's get into the topic today, Nick. So as we always do with these podcasts, let's baseline this. Before we move any further, and just explain what we mean or what you mean by payment control.
Okay. So a little bit of context and history, I think, is where we should start on this. So back in the day, payments were made on a batch basis. The payments were netted, incoming, outgoing. The exposures that you had at the central bank were based on your net exposures rather than your gross exposures. The central banks in the mid to late 80s wanted to protect their position as lender of last resort. So they introduced real-time bank settlement, which meant that real-time settlement was what you now relied on for the larger payments, the BPSs. So from that time on, there's been a need to control the flow of payment so it doesn't overly impact on your liquidity. And that's really what it is. It's a mechanism by which throughout the day, intraday basis, that you manage your cash flows out the door to a predetermined level based on the amount of flows that you have coming in plus your reserves.
Got it. Okay. So clear what it is. What about expanding on, you know, some of the core purposes of payment control?
So predominantly, it's really about controlling your liquidity. In terms of where we are most recently, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but if we look at it overall, especially since the introduction of BCBS 248, which is around monitoring and reporting of intraday liquidity, it's more of a concern to ensure that you understand what your position is, that you understand your flows, and you make a good attempt at ensuring that you control those in an appropriate way. So 15 or so years ago, we would have seen this predominantly just in the direct clearing fraternity, where they have a direct account. More and more, so it's becoming a concern of the indirect clearers or the non-correspondent banks, if you like, where they need to control their liquidity too and control the amount of reserves or buffers that they maintain. And a good way of doing that would be through payment control. Burned in.
Got it. Okay, so I guess before we move on, when I talk to banks, I hear things like payment scheduling, payment optimization, orchestration, payment control. So many different types of words for this. Are they the same thing, different things? Is it all part of one ecosystem of payments? What's your view on that?
So I think we're not very good at settling on one particular set of terminology in finance. So they can mean all the same thing. They can mean slightly different. If we take that word orchestration for a second, orchestration could be the management of flows across multiple gateways, if you like, or pipelines for payments. So you've got one set of criteria, deciding which one to take that through. It could also mean ensuring that you've received a payment from a counterparty before you make a payment out, a form of indirect netting, if you like. In terms of payment scheduling, that tends to mean scheduling payments from day to day. So you've received an advice in from a client or a customer saying that they want to make some payments on either a regular basis or individually on a particular value date, sometime in the future, or even on the day at a particular time. So payment scheduling. All of these things, optimization can be multiple things to multiple people. I mean, I think whether you do this through a control mechanism itself or you have various modules within an organization doing these things separately, yes, it can be part of an overall ecosystem. But essentially what we're talking about is creating, adding, or enhancing that with this term that we like to use, which is control, which I think we'll come on to, but I'm sure, but means sure a lot of other things as well.
Sure. And so when we talk payment control, that sits above any of the payment rails that a bank would use, because there's many, many rails that a bank can use, but ultimately it's how you control the holistic view of those payments.
Exactly right.
Got it. Okay, so what about our favorite topic, the regulator? Okay, so I've heard of quite a few views on this about what regulators either do think, could think, may think about managing payment flows. So some banks have said they don't want to do this, some banks do. There could be ramifications in controlling your payments and throttling the payments out. So what's your view on the regulators and also how banks react to what the regulators say as well?
Okay. I can't speak for all regulators. I've never worked for a regulator, but do understand.
And would never want to.
I'm past that. but essentially, let's think about what a regulator wants to do. What a regulator wants is a market that works in an orderly fashion, first and foremost. I think that if you start with that position, then look at some of the principles that they've applied over the last 15 or so years to the market since the financial crash in particular. Sound principles on liquidity and risk management, for instance, says, I think it's the second bullet in there, you will manage your intraday liquidity.
Yeah,
we expect you to do it. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the certain central banks, such as the Bank of England, have introduced certain mechanisms themselves that essentially is the payment control mechanism. The process for liquidity savings mechanism that uses, that's exactly what that is, really. It's a way of controlling those payment flows to ensure that you don't stress your payment, your liquidity reserves too much. Essentially any bank will have to have a conversation as part of the supervisory liquidity review that goes on the LSREP, where these things will be discussed. So it tends to be open and transparent in terms of the mechanism you use. Well, I think some banks might get nervous is where the temptation could be to control the market flow. So it's to stop payments entirely is not good for payment liquidity. Exactly. And to use another's organization for the purpose of supporting your own liquidity, also not particularly, it's probably frowned upon by regulators. So there's a balance to be had here. Yes, it's encouraged in certain ways. And yes, we have to report on liquidity, and we have to understand that we need to control those payment flows and control our buffers. There's nothing worse. I mean, we see the HQLA creeping up in so many places at the moment because people don't have proper controls. It's a consequence of not doing things as neatly and not allowing perhaps mechanisms such as payment control. If you use payment control within an holistic approach to Treasury, I think you'll probably find that the regulator would approve rather than disapprove.
I got it. But there's no hard and fast written rules around this, I guess, is what you're saying.
I've not seen anything other than those points that I've made, which seem to encourage payment control as such.
Yeah. Got and it. Because I remember. Sorry, go on, Nick.
Sorry. It's also the way you apply it, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll certainly come on to that, I think, in a short while.
Got it. So, I think it was about the time of the Silicon Valley Bank issues, one bank that we both know who was in a bit of trouble. They were actually issuing payments early because they didn't want the market to think that they're in trouble. And so that's a form of payment control the other way. So I guess it's open to manipulation in the end. It just needs, you know, some sound governance and oversight to make sure that it's done in the appropriate way for the right reasons as well.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that, but that was also a technique used by a number of large firms, large global institutions at the height of the financial crisis as well, be seen to be lending, be seen to be putting payments out, be seen to be actively engaged with the market to ensure that, to help actually calm everything down, not only as far as the market's concerned, but your own name, your own reputation, after all, as a bank is paramount.
So it's a positive thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think control is a positive thing, if I can just say. People have a tendency to think like we have this word throttling that has been used in the past. Well, throttling can be, strangulation, but what it can mean is regulation. If you think about an accelerator in a car, that's adjusting the throttle, the amount of fuel going in to the engine. If you think about it in those terms, you're actually actively engaging in the process to ensure that those flows work as well for you and your customer as they do for yourself. And that's really what it's about, I think.
Got it. Okay. So before we get into how payment control can enhance liquidity and risk, what are your views around the main factors to allow you to actually control payments? So What are the key parts, the key themes? What do you need?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, it's data. Yeah. And then I think you need a bit of technology to help analyze that data. So data is one thing. I would sometimes use the analogy of a Sudoku puzzle where you've got the various squares, some are filled in, some aren't. You've put into every square, every possible permutation, what the answer could be. It just looks like a mess. So you need to be able to disseminate and understand what that means for your flow. So first of all, it's data, the enrichment of data, ensuring that that data gets to you at the right time in the right place. When you action against that data, ensure that you create a record of what you've done. That's more data. And then you understand how that all fits together. Understanding what you should do and at what time you should do it, I think that's where technology plays a role quite significantly, actually.
Look, I agree. And I think we must be up to 15, 20 podcasts now. And I ask this question a lot and I get the similar answers every time, which is you need the right data in the right place at the right time, ideally real time. Then you need the right technology to be able to act on it. Sound governance and process are key as well, but it's pretty much the same for all of the topics that we talk about, Nick. So look, now we understand what you need, right? And assuming that we've taken your advice, can you give us your views on how it actually enhances liquidity and risk management?
Sure. So firstly, I think that whether you're an indirect or a direct clearer, there's definite advantage in being able to manage your flows and help manage your own liquidity position. That's first and foremost. It's also a ability to manage other kinds of risks as well, to a certain degree. So if I'm very much a belt and braces guy, where it doesn't cost any more and it's just as efficient, why not have belt and braces? Payment control, we're talking about in the terms of a day, intraday, rather than day on day. We wouldn't want to stop payments, but we want to stop and think, really, about whether the payment is appropriate, whether it's been signed off correctly, whether you're delivering or making a payment on behalf of sanctions, politically exposed people, jurisdictions or countries which are under sanctions. Something may have been missed through your own sanctions control. So there's that element. There's the counterparty risk element as well. Something has just happened in the market immediately, which means not necessarily you've been able to capture that elsewhere. You may well be able to capture in your payment flows. A phone call comes in. What's happening with, Nick Nichols Bank over there? It looks like it's another disaster that's happened. Its deposits are leaving. What are you going to do to stop making those payments? This is where payment control comes in as a risk mitigation capability, which can be, can be a full stop, or it can be we're saying let's just see what's happening with these payments. I think that as well as controlling your exposures to a counterparty, you've got the kind of alluding there to possible abject events within the market. So you might want to pause and think. It's taking what would be, if you do this right and you've got the right amount of technology behind you and you understand the principles which you're trying to apply to and the rules that you want to apply to your payments, you can really start to make what used to be intuitive decisions based on real data, which is delivered to you in the frame that you need it to be delivered to in order to make those decisions. So if we think about it, going back beyond the financial crisis to 9/11, there was a point where a large globally significant international bank had a war room. Their risk department wanted to stop all payments. Intuitively, the treasurer for Europe said, I don't think that is wise. We've got to make sure that we're seen to be doing the right thing as far as payments are concerned. This is a huge bank. And they took his advice. Payments flowed. The risk position wasn't known until the following day back then. But he made the right move, because if they had stopped all payments on all areas where they were actively managing, on a direct participant basis, the markets would have probably, it would have been a financial crisis some 7 years before it happened. So it's taking that intuition. He intuitively knew the right thing to do. It's taking that and allowing everyone to have that capability by allowing them to have the right data delivered to them at the right time. I think that's the main thing. But predominantly, it comes down to liquidity risk management, which is the ability to actually restrict or encourage the flow of security, flow of cash based on the amount of liquidity that you have available to you at any one time. If you do that correctly, not only does it impact or positively impact your risk management, which is a positive as far as the regulators are concerned, it should also allow you to bring down the amount of reserves that you have to a reasonable level. And that's a cost element as well. So you which in itself is a risk, because if you're borrowing, if you're borrowing too much to prop up your reserves, you're wasting money.
So ultimately, this is it's a set of rules that you codify in your solution that can be very nuanced. But ultimately, you might need to have that, that big red button that you press stop for, because you might need time to think. You shouldn't stop the flow completely for a period of time, but it's a rules. And I guess anything that's rule based, AI has a job to play now in that. So I guess there's the question, we've been asked it a few times, but where does AI play in this? Can it help me with payment control? Can it give me inputs, advice, and optimize it?
I completely agree. AI definitely has a role to play. I think the important thing, I'm not an expert on AI. I'm not an expert on many things. AI, if you think about what it can do immediately, right now, at this moment, it can take the most mundane things and work them through for you. So if you have a set of rules that you need to apply to something, and it needs to apply that to a whole bunch of data that you're getting in all at the same time, that it can apply those rules to your payments and ensure that they go at a pace that needs to go to ensure that you don't encroach on those restrictions that you have. What I would say about that is that overarching any AI, you need, as much as you do with anything, a governance structure. So, whether that's AI policing the AI or an actual human being, I don't know. But I would suggest that sometimes those rules will need to be tweaked. You need the flexibility to adjust. Something that AI should be able to do to a certain degree, but it's not exactly machine learning, is it? It's a little bit more advanced than that. You've got to be able to check whether A, it's adjusted, and whether B, it's adjusted correctly, I think. So, yeah, definitely a part to play. But I think that's
got it. Okay, and then just touching on the data point you mentioned, I was just thinking back to the last podcast with Tom Myman, and he mentioned the more data you have in a particular area, the more you can start to think about new products. So do you think a tool like this, you can start to think about offering clients new products, new SLAs? Is that something you can do?
Yeah, I think that I do. I think this is something we've talked internally about as well, in that there's an opportunity to create revenue. So if you think about it, what you're doing when you make a payment on behalf of a customer, you're using your liquidity to support their payment. This is just one example, okay? If that customer, so we already make time payments to cover things like CLS, for instance. Those payments have to go out first thing in the morning. If a customer came to you and said, I need to make a payment at a particular scheduled time, you can say to them, okay, well, we can do that, but it's going to cost you the cost of our liquidity plus a margin. And there's one example. It may well be that because you understand the behaviors of your customer, that it may make sense for them to make flows at a particular time of the day. It may make sense for them. It makes no difference whether they send it out first thing in the morning or last thing at night, so long as that payment goes. And after all, a bank's main, one of its main its obligations is to make the payment on validating at the moment before we go to plus zero. It's not necessarily to make it on an intraday basis unless it's timed. That's our point, that we have time payments and, you know, those payments can be paid for. So if that client doesn't want stuff to go out first thing in the morning and is quite happy for them to go last thing at night, encourage them to make them last thing at night, because that's when most of your liquidity has come back, which means that, you know, you need less liquidity for the entire day because that payment's going out later. So there's that would be a way of managing either through an SLA or a new liquidity product, what would you call it? Payment liquidity capability or something like that, yep. Right? So, yeah, something like that would work very well. I think also with excuse me, I've got a bit of a tickle. With MX coming in, the ISO 20022, there's a lot more information in there, I think. And perhaps it's better to speak to Nick Appleby on that rather than myself. But essentially, because you've got more information, more purpose codes as well, you get more information, then you're able to make better decisions about the kind of service you want to give to your customers and clients.
More richness. I get that. What would happen, Nick, if everyone started to do payment control? So if everyone optimizes, you think ultimately it'd seize the whole system up, or everyone's waiting for someone else, or do you think it'd be okay?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, that. And I remember having a conversation with my boss at the time when I was working at Credit Suisse, Barry Lewis, at the height of the crisis, around stopping payments entirely and what that might do, the logjam effect that might have on markets entirely. It's a dangerous game, and no doubt. I would say, though, that every bank is different. Every bank has slightly different requirements, different liquidity reserves, different buffers, different scope to be able to manage certain things. So if each bank were to manage payments in a way that actually worked directly, had a direct correlation to the amount of liquidity they had or reserves that they have, as we've said before, because you've got that control, you need less liquidity. That should mean that more banks are more profitable, and it should mean that there's more, ultimately more liquidity in the market as well, because you're not storing up liquidity just for the sake of, you know, money supply just for the sake of holding it in a reserve account. You're letting that go, so there's that benefit. I think in terms of the customer will be better off because they're in a more secure, they should, and it should be advertised if you're doing this stuff, you should be able to show that you're a more reliable bank than you were previously. And the regulators should be able to say the market generally is more stable than it's ever been in terms of payment liquidity. So I think there's positives and negatives. So long as people aren't stupid about it, panic, because panic is the worst thing that can happen to a market, I think it breeds stability, it breeds an orderly market rather than disproves that. So.
Got it, Nick. And look, I've got a host of more questions I could ask you, but unfortunately we're running out of time. But if you had one takeaway for the audience today around payment control, what would it be?
I think if you should examine it, if examine your own capabilities within that organization right now. Are you able to schedule payments on an intraday basis? Can you prioritize those payments? Can you manage your payments against a moving target on a reserve basis? You want to reserve against a particular amount of that total liquidity or all of it? And how do you police it? How do you manage that? So take a look at what you've got now. See whether it can be improved, if this has proved at all helpful or opened eyes. Please come and talk to us, because we're happy to act as a consultancy on this sort of stuff, right? I think we've got I think if there's an awful lot that can be done right now without AI to improve most payment management systems.
Got it.
So that's why.
Perfect. No, that's great. Look, we have run out of time, Nick. So unfortunately, thanks for joining us today and sharing your views there. If anyone's got any questions you want to ask us after the event, please do so and we'll respond later. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We will, as we always do, put the podcast out on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Now then, thanks everyone for joining. Look out for our next podcast. It's going to be on the 11th of July, and we have Murad Chowdhury joining us. A lot of you will know Murad. He's one of the foremost treasury experts. We've got a lot of topics to cover with him, and you'll have a chance to win his book. And if you haven't seen Murad's book, it's like the Bible of treasury. So a thoroughly great read, and it's got literally everything in it. So we'll be having a winner of that during it. So thanks very much for joining everyone today. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.